Welcome everybody to another episode of Weekly Wings, a DroneLife.com podcast. As shared, the volume of episodes this season, this year, might not be as high, probably coming with one every other week here, but lots happening in between each episode. As always, I'm Paul Rossi here, joined by Terry Neff. We appreciate each and everybody for tuning in and getting your information here. We have gotten feedback on the YouTube channel. People talk about backgrounds and things like that. I'm working on the background here, trying to add another degree. Other than that, not going to be any lighting. This isn't for the hey, look at our amazing backgrounds. Really, we're just trying to come each and every week with some content. Terry and I discussing things, a little bit of opinion, fact, you know, information. So this week we'll dive into some great topics. As always, we'll be looking at DJI removing geozone restrictions. A lot of folks like, oh man, that's not cool. And it's like, well, if you understand at large, like every other manufacturer doesn't do that. It's not like they're not going against the grain here. They kind of were going against the grain by having these restrictions to begin with. We're going to look at some companies trying to do motor production, UAS motor production, to compete with China and create that U.S. supply chain. Look at some innovative trail cam drone coming out of the Ukraine-Russian war efforts over there. Also, look at some counter UAS tech that was involved in the presidential motorcade. And then in the success story area, we're going to look at a couple of police departments that are have announced publicly DFR programs. And then we'll wrap things up looking at how drones are being used in New York to monitor for illegal, not authorized trash dumping. And we talk a lot about light shows on the Weekly Wings podcast. And with everything that's happened, we're seeing the formation of kind of like an industry association that's going to, you know, help represent and speak on behalf of these companies that are putting on these drone shows. So super, super informational episode. Terry, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, just pretty good. That's it.
I mean, there's nothing to complain about, you know. I'm just turned 21, so I'm doing all the 21 things. Not drinking. That's not what I meant by that. But, you know, like I've been trying to be more of an adult recently. Yeah.
Right on. Pretty good UFC fight Saturday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those were good. I'm kind of sad we have to wait 2 weeks for the next event. But my favorite fight was the Jiří Procházka fight. I had anxiety through the entire thing. That dude scares me when he does anything. So it's just...
Yeah, he's like, he's got some power, right? But he also has that, I don't know if it's a glass jaw, right? But it's like, he's so vicious. He goes in there, he just kind of starts throwing and he leaves himself a little bit open. But that's
glass
one...
cannon.
Yeah, one of those people who usually thrives on just the absolute, the chaos, right? He's one of those folks that kind of thrives in a very chaotic.
He definitely wants to be in a firefight. Even though, I mean, he did improve his head work, he still doesn't keep his hands up. He kept his hands up for maybe 10 seconds.
And so, yeah, just to jump into things here, recently DJI ends their the fly safe portion of their software, and that fly safe portion, which a lot of people had the geofencing created in 2013, and this was intended to basically like a governor for a car, right? It prevented you from operating in certain areas. A lot of folks would say, hey, don't upgrade your, don't update the geofence, the no fly zone. And because every time you updated it, it would make the drone would have more restrictions on where you could and couldn't fly. Other manufacturers, you could go back and find videos where, you know, these other manufacturers that were trying to take market share from DJI, they were promoting and marketing the fact that their drones had no restrictions whatsoever. And it was your responsibility as the operator to do the right thing. And so what DJI is saying is they're placing control back in the hands of the drone operators.
I mean, I know you were saying people are getting mad about this. I don't really see why anybody's, I mean, I guess you can get mad about this, but ultimately no one else does it. And it's going to save them a lot of money not developing and paying somebody to make sure there's updates every week or however often they update it.
Well, I wouldn't say they're going to save money. And this does, they have come out and said that this is not a response to, I mean, at this point, it's basically, and to bring you up to speed a little bit since our last episode and where we are today, it's like if getting the DJI drones into the United States now has become almost impossible. And that's because of a lot of the political stuff happening. So now DJI goes and makes this move. And so people are seeing it as like hey, if you're not going to let us sell our drones in the United States, if you're going to try to, you know, keep us out of that US market, then we're going to, it's weird. You know, it's like, this is like tit for tat. Like, all right, now we're going to make your airspace less safe because they didn't do this previously. But also what DJI has said is that the FAA has introduced the remote ID requirements, which means drones should be broadcasting their information like a license plate. And because this requirement went into effect, then authorities now have the tools that they need. And so the drone, it's like saying authorities have the ability to now track and monitor drone flights. So we shouldn't have to build this into the drones and we shouldn't have to keep it active. But a lot of people are thinking it's like a stunt, like a political stunt, because again, it's very hard to get DJI drones right now.
Well, I mean, the way I'm looking at it, it could be a political stunt. I mean, they kind of got like a false veil to kind of justify it, but they're saving money doing this. They're probably saving quite a bit of money doing this. They're just cutting this completely.
But are they saving anywhere near as much money as they're losing? Why save the money by doing that when it makes people question the integrity of the company? But in reality, the US is trying to make it, politicians are trying to make it impossible for them to sell new drones into the US. So why would you care if you were a business and you couldn't even enter or sell into that market? Would you care what that is going on in that market?
Yeah. So you cut it and save money.
And then are they going to continue to provide support for people who own those drones? Like if you own a drone in the US that's made by DJI, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
folks used to be able to submit, like if you were a police agency or something, you could submit to DJI, like, you want to make this prison or this jail or like a certain area, you could have it put up on these like warning maps and stuff. So I don't know. It's interesting for me. I don't care. Do you want a governor on your car?
No, I would like to take mine off. It caps out at 116.
So, but is that, I don't know. Is that a governor or is that just the performance of the vehicle?
No, it shuts off power once you get to that 116.
And so you would say, why would they have the ability to? Couldn't you just watch a YouTube video and basically do that yourself?
I don't know. It's a Volkswagen. That'd be pretty hard.
Because it's basically, again, to put it in the hands of the operator, anyone who's a doing the right thing, has permissions, it's one less step that you really have to take. But at the end of the day, for them to have kept it in there is pretty, and especially everything that's already built out, because like airports don't change. So this was about airspace, controlled airspace, and to have just kept it the way it was probably wouldn't have costed anything. To add more to it, you know, someone would have had to have done it, but to have just had the system and to have just kind of left it there. So as much as DJI wants to say like, oh no, we're just putting the hands back in the operator, it's like, why not have done it 3 months ago or 6 months ago, as opposed to like the same point when you can't even get these drones.
I don't know. Maybe they're trying to play to the American market by saying you have more freedom. Keyword there, freedom. I don't know. That's a stupid way of thinking about it. But.
And tying into China, it's the companies that make the drones, DJI, Autel. So it's the fact like, not only do we not want to buy the drones from China because there's a security risk that maybe they're accessing data, but also that, you know, I get it. It's like, hey, if we're buying certain things from them, they should buy certain things from us. Because if that balance becomes uneven, then everything is going in this direction. Short term doesn't, we don't notice it, but 20 years, 30 years from now, that shift of, you know, money, income, will have an impact. So there's certain things when you look back, it's like, yeah, it's fine if we buy Chinese stuff, right? Everybody said, oh, they're dumping this stuff in our country. Well, there is typically things in place, agreements where they should be buying a certain amount of American stuff as well. So at the end of the day, hey, they're good at tech, but we're good at this. And so there should be this kind of balance of dollars, you know, moving between countries. But either way, we're if we can't get their drones, they're also saying, well, we shouldn't be making drones with their supplies. Because if you're just buying the supplies to make the drones, it's still going to China. And so one of the big things, batteries, right? So we've talked 3 months, 4 months ago about companies making acquisitions and movements in the battery space. And then the next thing is motors, right? The production of electric motors that are going to allow these aircraft to fly. So a company, Oranzi Inc., is...
Orsani.
What's that?
Orsani.
Or...
Orsani. Like, or as in like the paddle name. Sani, like Dasani.
Yeah, but it's Oransi. So it's going to be Sani, right? Oranzi.
We're going to need to pull up a YouTube video of this guy saying his name.
And this company, the company name is Orsani. The correct company name is Oranzi. So it said Orsani, but the correct company name is Oranzi. I think I would guess that's like Oranzi. And so if we click here, right, what you find out is this company, they got started making air purifiers, but they were making air purifiers first, from what I understood, with Chinese components. like in order for them to make and produce competitive air filters in the beginning. But eventually they were able to grow the business, produce a product, you know, build a market, and then they began to manufacture their parts and components themselves. And so now they have assembled in the US air purifiers.
Okay.
So maybe it's not all the components, but they're assembled in the US.
And yeah, I see the like on their about page. I do see it. They said they merged with Aviermore Technologies so they could bring manufacturing to the local community.
And yeah. And so they want to make motors that are similar to what they're basically what their existing product line would already use. But
yeah, makes sense.
Expand into this, you know, drone market.
I mean, an air purifier would need a pretty durable, long lasting, strong motor to keep that thing running constantly. So, I mean, it makes sense they're stepping into it. It's definitely a path they could follow.
And it talks about slotless motors and this technology. Basically, they've been working with this for a while. And it's just saying, how can we grow and expand and what exists? And so this, you know, move away from that, you know, Chinese supply chain, it really is opening up the door for opportunity. So it says that they have annual sales of $10 million. They've got a huge facility. And so it's going to be super interesting to basically see where things are. The article here talks about the Israeli and Ukraine war, where you're seeing a ton of those, you know, low cost motors that you're seeing in that FPV. And this is where Unusual Machines is trying to piece things together. And so speaking of Unusual Machines,
good segue,
which I happened to jump on Friday, and they did a little jump on Tuesday. So thank you, Unusual Machines. The company announced that they've appointed Brad Mello as their vice president of manufacturing. And, oh, by the way, they announced that this individual, Brad Mello, will be joining. And the first thing that he'll be doing is leading their development of in-house brushless motor production. And his background, Mr. Mello's background, is leading automation projects at Tesla for the Model 3 and co-founding Mode Designs, a mechanical keyboard company, a premium mechanical. What's a mechanical keyboard, Terry? I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to tell me what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, so it's just a mechanical switch. So there's basically a spring, and then there's like it presses in and it like engages the key. So like a membrane keyboard would be like the little plastic things that feel terrible. My keyboard that you've seen in person is considered a premium mechanical keyboard. This thing was like,
see, that's why I knew I was like, I bet you that was a premium mechanical, where this like
this thing's made out of aluminum.
I bet you this I bet you my Apple keyboard here is not mechanical.
Yeah, no, that's a membrane.
So
go ahead.
Yeah, so pretty interesting here, right? Because Unusual Machines had purchased, you know, Get FPV. They were doing some other stuff. Forget what the other one was. But for them to then move into manufacturing, because what we said in the past is they're making a flight controller. So like building a frame, the frame itself, and you can cut carbon fiber. That's not challenging. Driving down your cost to buy those materials is where you're going to save. and you don't have to have like, you know, significant knowledge and design engineering stuff to cut frames. But when it comes to like the flight controller, having access to the components to produce that, more challenging, having the ability to, you know, produce motors that are very reliable and very, not just making motors, but consistently producing reliable motors that require, you know, really specific design build plans and calibrations and things of that nature. This is why everyone doesn't just have like an electric car. So unusual machines, they're like, it's interesting. I like this because I brought up this is stock Titan. So it brings in the positives and the negatives. Vertical integration is a positive. An experienced manufacturing executive who has a, you know, Tesla background. Right now, when you just see everything that's happening, and I look back and Donald Trump, having not recognized things develop as you learn and get older and gain experience. One of the last things Trump did in 2021 as president was sign the executive order that required the departments of state, the Homeland Security and DOD. He was the one that required them to initially do a review on Chinese drones. And so now when you see, well, now he's coming back into office and, oh, his son is on the board of Unusual Machines, you're like, oh, there's probably a pretty good chance that domestic drone manufacturing and production is going to see some sort of, you know, positive.
Yeah. I would like to point out something for Mr. Brad Mello's background. Usually, okay, so just the space of mechanical keyboards. The whole point of mechanical keyboards is to have a super quality design that will not break, and it has to be unbelievably like reliable. So he's already coming from a background of trying to make the most reliable and efficient and just as best as a product can be. They are serious about this. Never go down this rabbit hole. They get mad about like bad keyboards, like, oh, there's not enough foam in it. Like, dude, it's a keyboard.
So are you familiar with this keyboard company?
Not necessarily. I only did a little bit of research when I bought mine, but they look amazing. Honestly, I'm sure if I go into Reddit right now, there's probably going to be, which is weird because it doesn't, foam is optional.
It's time to rethink keyboards.
Yeah, like, so he's making a quality product. It's clearly product. It's a clearly like, it's going to be reliable.
But look at this though. I don't understand why. So you're telling me, based on what I'm looking at right here, that this keyboard, you can see the screen, right?
Yes.
You're telling me that this keyboard, the way that they made keyboards when keyboards first came out, is the actual best design? Like, what is this
somewhat,
like?
So the switches have changed. You can go, like, there's so many different switches. They all feel different. They all have different reliability. But it just goes so deep. Like, I think it even has a little, like, cushioning. For the dampening of your,
like, underneath strokes. It and stuff, like what you can't see. But yeah, why do they look like chunky and it looks clunky? It doesn't look like
feels better to type on too.
Okay. I just see, like, you know how people's wrists and stuff, you see like all these different, like,
Got stuff for that.
Like, do you have a mouse that you move? Like, do you some lobster people do. Claw your mouse?
Those are actually very comfortable to use, by the way.
Are they?
Yeah.
Keycaps. Look at how customizable.
There's different types of keycaps. There's different sizes. So like 75% is what I have.
But do you see this has a little
65. I got a 65%
tilt to it. What's the percentages? Do you have any idea what their percentage
is? Yeah, so like the size of them. So I'm pretty sure. Like I said, I don't really know too much. I think I got a 65%, then it's got an added volume knob. But it goes into, like, this dude knows how to make a quality product that is going to last and people are going to be happy with it. He has a background in already offering that, and I'm sure people are happy with Tesla Model 3s to an extent.
Special projects. Okay. Limited edition. Okay. Did it say he was one of the founders?
Co-founder.
Co-founder. Desmat switches.
Yeah, so these are all different switches. Like, it gets crazy. It looks like they make their own switches too, which is cool.
Well, and I think that goes into the production aspect. If they're doing
well, you can buy switches from China for like dirt cheap.
30 switches for $10. Well, that's interesting. Didn't realize I'd be down looking at switches. Yeah. It's like, but the thing, what it is like, one, the website, right, is pretty.
It's always going to be well made for a keyboard website.
The wood grain, the vintageness of it. I don't know. Just like I grew like keyboard. I can remember Lemmings when the computer was first brought in. And so there's like this, they're tapping into the nostalgia aspect. Like there's a huge consumer base that no matter what the product is, a huge part, I think, of market now is made up of folks like myself who are like starting to be like, oh my God, taxes. Cause like I've said like, oh, I paid taxes in the past, but now all of a sudden married, like doing, you're like, what? You're like, oh my gosh. It's crazy. But those folks are starting to buy more things and buy things that like you would consider, I don't know, instead of buying a $15 or $20 keyboard on Amazon and then it doesn't work and then you don't even care. It's maybe we're circling back to, but it's more than it used to be. It's you know, finely manufactured in the United States, but it's going to cost $260 for a keyboard. You're like, are the switches that nice? Is it really?
A quality keyboard will make you rethink life.
Well, maybe I don't want to rethink life.
I think it's a great step for unusual machines, just to get back to that. Sorry we went off on a tangent about keyboards, but it's important because this dude understands how to make a quality product that is reliable, is what I'm getting at. Even just from looking at their website, I can tell like keyboards the shit, you know?
Yeah, and so I didn't, and I didn't dive too much into like that aspect. So that is pretty interesting. Like I looked at the article, read it, got my unusual machines, rode through the weekend, you know, big day in the market yesterday, not for everybody. And then I got out because I'm like, yo, this is way overvalued. There's just no way super bearish on the value of these American companies today, not the market opportunity, right? I see the opportunity in the market. I just don't see these RCAT, unusual machines. The ones that are Skydio that are selling in the US, they're not public. So it's super interesting, especially if we are to like end the war. Right. What happens to an unusual machines that is bolstering up to make these small FPV, you know, type drones? If Trump is eliminating Israeli, you know, Palestinian conflict, ending the war in Ukraine, and then trying to put in defense systems. Cause I was talking, it's just like this. We've been in a race for decades over nuclear weapons. And everybody always thought, well, if they get them and they send them, our only option is to just send them back. And it's just like guaranteed, assured, you know, destruction. Versus now, we have the ability to create technology and put it in places like Greenland, right? Gulf of America, I think that's pretty, pretty cool. We have the ability to early detect, even if these countries, right, come and produce a nuclear weapon. I think our focus should be not on firing back, but really getting systems in a place that we can eliminate that nuke before it gets to us. So there's no guaranteed destruction. And then if you're Iran, North Korea, once you realize that we have the ability to just stop your nuke, all the money and all the years that they've been trying to develop and get to that technology, it's just all a waste. It's like you've been doing all that work to get to a point where it isn't even effective anymore. And it sounds like that's the whole, this Iron Dome, like that's the direction that Trump wants to put us, is super proactive versus reactive, and having a ton of little, you know, drones is super reactive, unless they're going to sell into the commercial market. But I'm not seeing anything that points in that direction. And then Palantir on the counter UAS side, Palantir, they are a public company. They partnered with Anduril, and we talked about this in the past. So you can look up, you know, I see you're going to do it, Terry. We've got other listeners. Again, we're not yet, we're like Bitcoin and crypto. We're not securities. We're not, neither Terry nor I are investors or whatever the term is, but Palantir is working with Anduril and OpenAI, which OpenAI and Stargate, this whole new thing, Oracle, yeah. I put a little money in Oracle too, and yesterday, and that worked out for me. It was nice. Just a quick, I'm kind of learning here. Anyway,
be careful with those days.
Don't listen to anything Paul says. Again, there's OpenAI partnering with Oracle, SoftBank, or whatever they are for the healthcare. OpenAI is partnered with Anduril and Palantir because they're going to create a counter UAS system that's going to thrive on AI, right? And so the hardware exists, the technology exists, but again, Palantir, another thing I just think overvalued. I think everything is kind of overvalued. So what people are saying with the drone, buy the dip. U.S. drone companies, but anyway, don't buy it all.
I would like to say there's two sides to the coin. You're like, oh, well, Trump's going to end the war. What if he escalates the war? And then there's always two sides that he could de-escalate. It could de-escalate, or it could escalate dramatically to where this company's going to be worth $4K a share.
Yeah, you never know, because it is kind of that double-edged sword where he said, hey, there will be hell to pay. If I get into office and these hostages aren't back, there will be hell to pay. Meaning, hey, I'm going to send every drone we can get in. It's not like it's either all or nothing, I think, is where you're kind of getting at with the Trump. It's like you're either getting no or it's everything. If you don't do what we say,
or a nuke.
The hammer's coming down. And so I think just what we saw in before he even got in, the fact that the hostages started to turn over, that there is a desire to de-escalate things. But tell us, staying on this American thing here, we've got AeroSense Systems, Massachusetts. Massachusetts. We're not going to talk about the drivers from Massachusetts, right? We'll save that for a different podcast. But what is this here, Terry? What piqued your interest?
I mean, the design, first off. For any listeners, this is a coaxial design drone. So it's got, I don't know the best way to describe this. It's like a helicopter with two blades stacked on top of each other.
Counter-rotating.
And it's basically just a cylinder, and then it has a camera at the bottom of it if you want a camera on it. But otherwise, it's just a normal drone. It's just a different design. But they were going on in the article about how it's going to be, it's lighter. It should have a little more durability because it's a cylinder and it's a little harder to break and withstand winds and stuff. Should have a longer battery life because it weighs less. Just stuff like that.
And so Ascent Aero Systems, that's the company. Ascent, A-S-C-E-N-T, Ascent Aero Systems. I have seen these fly in person. They've been, for the last few years, they've been at all the major trade shows. They came out to North Carolina. There was an event at Washington Warren Airport. And just a completely different design, different product. I mean, Very, very purpose-built drone. Not a hobbyist thing. I saw this fly in Washington, at Washington Warren Airport, and it wasn't just one, it was three of them flying together. So they've gone all in on the AI. If you really look at, DJI just came out with the Matrice 4, which is like, it looks just like every other drone that they made, but the software on board, the AI, the brain on that aircraft is like, there's nothing like it. So what it can do, not what it looks like, but what it can do is just second to none. And so when you look at the American manufacturers that are going after, especially the defense contracting now, it's, hey, I need a drone that can identify friend or foe. I can, I need a drone that I can basically put a, like a learned capability, something that's already been taught, and have it go out and find that thing without having to interact with it. And so that's what Ascent Aerosystems created. They showed in a flight demo how the one drone with the high-res camera could actually go out and do a scan in order to find like a down vehicle. And they were using a power wheel. Right, they had a power wheel remote controlled, or maybe it wasn't a power wheel. They had like a remote control vehicle, and they were using that as the down vehicle. And the drone actually went out, and it did this mapping mission, and it identified that target of interest. And then these two drones launched. One was carrying a payload, and it actually went and delivered, you know, pretended to kind of land and deliver something, while a third drone came in to replace like the first drone, which the battery was going low. So they're creating this like whole like system of systems. I tried on the right way to explain it, where these things basically operate together without a lot of direct interaction from the operator. So they would act the same way like a group of soldiers would. You know, you go out, you have different riflemen. You've got my lack of knowledge would come out. But like each team, fire team, has different folks that are carrying, you know, different kind of equipment
support,
sets.
Medic, you know.
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
And so that's how they're seeing the drones, is you kind of have this swarm, and in that swarm collectively they're able to accomplish like a whole, you know, subset of tasks. So to see it,
so you're saying they're, I mean, obviously you just said they're using AI. I don't see anything about that on their website.
No.
That's pretty cool. Didn't know that.
Might, and I don't know, and it's hard to, and I don't know if they would call that AI the way some of these companies are like integrating it. So they're just, it's like a very maybe entry level compared to some other stuff. And then the one other interesting is they were acquired by Robinson Helicopter.
I've heard that, haven't I? They make like the small,
the Robinson Bell helicopter, like the tiny Bell.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of them. So they bought them?
Yes.
Oh,
they're this. You know, was it the Robinson Helicopter? That company was.
Yeah,
that's why I remember. Yes, that company that we talked about that was making them into drones was doing it with a Robinson.
Looks like Robinson's trying to get their foot in the door.
And so 100% they're rotorcraft. Like when you look at the method of propulsion, they're already, they were already doing that, but on a manual side. So what they could potentially do is like they purchase it, they refine the software and the performance. And then all you have to do is integrate that into your helicopters.
It's a very interesting product. I'm definitely going to be keep my eye on them.
And so then there's Ascent Industries Platforms.
I wonder, so, like, I wonder how much the payload is for these. I don't exactly.
10 pounds, it says here, nearly 10 pounds. But when they talk payloads, a lot of that is like cameras that weigh up to 10 pounds as opposed to carrying that much weight. But if it can carry that much in camera payload, then that's going to be the same. However, usually when you carry a camera or a weather payload, you're going to have a camera and the 10 pounds available for batteries and payloads.
60 miles per hour is crazy.
Yeah, that's...
Their white paper, I don't know where I found that, but their white papers, I looked through it a little bit. They explained how exactly everything works.
6.5 pounds. The max payload is saying 6.5 pounds. But it looks like one of those drones where you can put one or two batteries, and if you put one battery, you can carry more weight, but it doesn't fly for as long. If you put two batteries, so you kind of got to decide, you know, is distance, you know, range, distance, time important, or is amount of payload important?
I wonder whose batteries they use, or are they making their own?
It looked like they were green and potentially blue certified, so they could be making their own. Another tech thing here, I'm pretty sure we talked about this. I'm pretty sure.
This?
Not no. This specifically, but when we talked about like the drones for ambushes.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
I feel like this is kind of similar, and we talked about how just having it for the camera would be beneficial.
They heard us and slapped a trail camera on a bamboo piece of bamboo and told it to fly.
It's super interesting, and again, stuff like this comes out, and I just don't like. I try to look at this and see like, is this AI generated? Is there any inconsistencies here? But this makes sense. It's a cell phone enabled trail cam. So this drone only has to fly for, you know, 10, 15.
It's a one-time use.
Yeah, the drone is only getting it to the position. The drone is not going to do anything once it gets there, because these trail cams, this might have solar power built into it. It's very low power. So, you know, with batteries, it could, the article's saying, you know, weeks, you can fly these drones out undetected and
just put them somewhere where you can figure out if somebody's doing something. I like how it mentioned in the Viet Cong.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Used it. At the Ho Chi Minh Trail, you're always trying to figure out what the movement is, what's moving. And so I guess there was a program called Igloo White, and the government dropped sensors. Cameras didn't exist at the time, right? Camera sensors, but they had, you know, what sounds like acoustic sensors, magnetic sensors, and they were able to drop those along the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
80% worked after land. They just dropped them bad boys from 300 feet.
you see these things? It's like these are some of the sensors that the Air Force dropped.
How'd they retrieve the data from them?
In the 60s? Remote. Yeah, they had, you know, I mean, if you think about it, this is in the time period where 60, Sputnik, NASA, we're doing long range, you know, radio. We didn't have the ability to push video. That's what they were saying. Like, to push video back then would have been damn near impossible, but to send a signal, all it needed to be was just like, if this thing felt some vibration, it could send like a long range bing. That's it. Yeah. That was it.
There's a car.
And you're not even sure if it was accurate. You know what I mean? If it pinged, you're like, oh man, is that real?
A deer or is it a car?
Oh, here we go. Circling overhead. So this is what they did. They dropped them. We should just read the articles first. This is a problem. We don't have to. So we're reading the articles with you. We're all learning together. It says about 80% worked after they landed. Battery life's for weeks. And they would fly aircraft overhead, which makes sense. If you have, you know, a clear view from the sensor up, if anything went off, they, especially at night, you didn't have thermal cameras. You couldn't see through the vegetation, but these sensors could potentially ping, you know, back to the aircraft overhead. That's crazy. And then the data would get passed to a data center in Thailand. Holy moly. Mm. Using the IBM 360. These computers nowadays probably couldn't even do any, like, you know,
I'm pretty sure it's like a 100th of what my phone does. I'm sure of it.
And it was like,
that's probably two computers in that 20,000 square foot. Data.
Yeah. The 20,000 square foot. How many computers are in here? Oh, one. It is the whole, it, this is the computer. And then strike aircraft would arrive 3 to 5 minutes after contact. So it was like, you know, it was like full like you talk about automation, you know, very little human in the loop. Nowadays, put the sensor out, detection, UAV. Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're just dropping bombs. They don't know who they killed.
Dude, that's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, props. I mean, maybe not props, but. You know, Russia's getting creative. We got to give them some props on the way they're getting creative over there.
So major disadvantage of the ground sensors is that they couldn't view the target or transmit like a pinpoint location. So to overcome this shortcoming, large number of bombs were dropped on every suspected coordinate.
That's like hearing somebody knock on your door, or you think you hear somebody knock on your door, and you just shoot your shotgun at the window, just like.
And I'm pretty sure, like, now that I think about it, I remember learning about like the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and I'm pretty sure we just bombed the crap out of it. And now I know why, because all these sensors. Igloo White cost $1 billion a year, and was presented as a triumph of technology. Dude, that is
it's a lot of money back then.
This is a good episode right here. Good episode. And so here's one of these trail cams. And so basically forever putting things up in order to detect and get information. So pretty interesting. And it talks about Starlink.
There's another photo of the drone right there. It's a better photo, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. But what the hell is this thing down
here?
That's
bamboo, bro. That's
no, but
that's
like, what is the one on the bottom? Oh, it's like a frame.
Yeah, I see. It's just not on the ground. You want it up a little bit. They could have camouflaged it a little better.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, so and they're talking about Starlink in here and how you can, you know, you don't have to have an aircraft circling overhead anymore. You can use other forms of a drone delivery system means, smart place and trail cams, monitor activity. Yeah, anyway, so trail cams go to war. Interesting. Here's it. Dude, that's crazy, though, because, again, look at this. This is just like, this is war. Here's war. An FPV, rec pilot, you know, fun time flying in a trail cam. So they've literally taken, like, an American's, the only thing you do is just strap the gun to it. I mean, it's like, don't do that, right? But moving along.
Don't do it and say it was our fault.
As much as I don't want to talk about like the Ukraine and Iran, and it's just like some of the stuff, it's like you have to recognize and address that. And I think that, again, trickle down technology. How long until a police department? What about an agency, a department, Homeland Security, you know, border? This is the type of stuff that we may see get integrated into our own mm-hmm. public safety operations. So I got something here, Terry. Tell us Trump's motorcade. What are we looking at?
So nobody knows officially, but there's reports that these like antennas sticking off the back of the Suburbans are like anti-drone technology. Have no idea what that means, but that's just what the Twitter post said, and that's where I take all my information from. So.
I was thinking,
but
it's
would
like,
make sense. It would make sense for anti-drone technology being on the.
Oh, I thought that was Baby Shark right there, and then here comes Mommy Shark.
Don't these Suburbans look old? Aren't these old Suburbans?
That one certainly does. The one that we're looking at right now, like the lights and whatnot.
Yeah, it probably costs like $500K to get that bad boy. So we'll give him a break on that. But definitely the right step forward for the anti-drone technology on the car.
Well, they got to shell game it, right? Like I saw when he was during the inauguration, it looked like there was like 36 of these cars.
Around the building?
Oh, like parked out front. You know, it's just like there was like so many of the vehicles.
And did they look like these?
Oh, yeah. It was just a whole row and line of them. And maybe it wasn't 36.
It might have been for the VIPs, just everybody there.
Well, look at this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 black cars. And that was going to the airport. I think they just had a long motorcade and it was in DC and it was not like there's a Cadillac. So I think when they were in DC, they probably had a lot more cars and a lot more people. Whereas this is
entry security inauguration time.
And then this is a little more secure of an area pulling right up to this, this plane here. But certainly seems like it could be counter UAS stuff. I mean, I'm not just looking at the size though and how it compares to the stuff we've
seen.
Probably
an antenna.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably Starlink, right?
That literally might be it. I mean, I'm sure the internet connection in that lead box isn't too great, you know?
Because you would think as they're moving, not such a concern, but to have something around the airport, I don't know. This is crazy. I think the threat, right, with the assassination attempts and then everything, it's just like everything is – you have to go above and beyond. But at this time, we really need to see companies that can come in and say, here's an established product that works.
And you can strap it to the top of your car.
Yeah. So a couple of things here as we kind of close out. We had a couple of police departments, and I don't know if Flock Safety is publicly traded. I don't think they are. I think they're part of the Ben Horowitz.
Are you looking at Redmond or Hempstead?
Looking at Redmond first, who is not going with Flock Safety. My guess is they're probably working with like Axios just because. And so Redmond, Washington police is working with the article states Skydio. You're going to say 3 Skydio and 2 Brink drones.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, you're good. And so I want to know the big question at this point is where. And nobody, I don't know, it's like, where did the money come from for them to buy this? Because what started to come out is basically investors in companies will invest in that company and in that technology. And then they go, and these are like super, super rich people. Then they go and they give money to police departments to buy the product that they invested in. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. They could have just had a few drug dealers that they were arrested to, and they seized their property. But we don't talk about that.
Oh, that could have happened. What I'm saying is in Las Vegas, that's what's happened. The Las Vegas Police Department, it's bought in Skydio drones. And then you find out that all the money that they used to buy the Skydio drones
came from Skydio.
It came from one of Skydio's biggest investors. And then Skydio has gone out and used the, they've marketed their relationship with Las Vegas Police Department. And so other departments see that and they're like, oh, they're working with Las Vegas. You know, it's basically becomes a marketing tool. But I mean, that's business, I guess.
How do you determine where you want to place the drone docking systems?
Calls. So these bigger departments, they already have heat maps. Every time they get a call, they'll log it so they know what time and the location. And so effective departments, folks who are managing things, what they can do is they can pull things up and they can say on Saturday nights, this is on average, we get this many calls between 10 and 4 a.m. And this is where the majority of the calls are coming from. So it's not like, we don't know what's going to happen. You're looking at things over time and you're saying, well, this is where we're putting more of our resources. So the drones that are in a box are going to go in areas where one, you have higher call volumes and you have lower response or higher response times, places that are hard to get to and places that have a lot of activity. If that,
that makes sense. I forgot that data existed for a minute.
Data. You're like, what's that?
Good on Redmond PD. Good job, guys.
So good on Redmond. Whatever product I guess you're going with, I mean, at the end of the day, this is the type of technology that will help and benefit the communities. And so a second agency, as we've talked about, DFR, Beyond Visual Line of Sight, the technology is advancing. The regulations are advancing. Hempstead Police Department. In New York. So the Hempstead Police Department out of New York, this article came out about a week ago that they're launching later this year. They're going to be launching a DFR program and they're going to be using Flock Safety as their software solution in order to manage their flights. And so they're using the Flock, they're using the Aerodome DFR system. So there's a couple products out there, Aerodome, US, partially US company. They make the dock, but they're using DJI drones. So this is a solution for folks that already have drones. All you have to do is buy the dock. The other companies, they're selling you the drone and the dock. So a village, they're going to do this in a village.
No way a village needs this.
Well, whenever I hear
like 10 people.
Yeah. Well, whenever I hear village, I think retirement, I think, money, like a small group of people with, you know, tax revenue and people who are willing to pay probably like donation money being used because the people in the village, they value security, safety. Yeah.
Well, if village. It goes from, if I'm not mistaken, like if you go like more north from like North Carolina, I think it's like, I don't know if it goes from like cities to like the naming changes, like it goes to village or it's weird because I have noticed that some of the naming conventions are different the further north you go.
Oh, we got a village right down the street. We got Ramcatty Village.
Yeah, but that they're doing it because it's cool, you know. Like these other places have been there for.
What do you think? It's like when you go there, it's going to be like a wood, like a.
It's a wood house. No,
not a. But like, there's like a rock fence, like a stone. The whole thing is surrounded by.
I wish I knew the other word I was looking for. It would have helped a lot. I don't think of it as the UK, okay?
Yeah. Welcome to the village. Like the township.
Township. There you go. Township.
The township. This is a township of such and such. Yeah, I already talked about. So you sent this one too. I saw this pop up, drone shows.
Yeah.
Just a couple minutes, just wrapping up here. What's going on? What do you see happening here? Why do you think this is happening?
So this is happening because the safety has been questioned for drone shows recently, because there's been a few unfortunate accidents and a few excellent problems. Like, there's been problems with drone shows recently. So there's a new drone show association. They're just trying to develop, you know, industry standards and safety. That's more or less what they're doing. I didn't really get to read the article too much, but I know you mentioned that they're trying to help, like, the companies, like, in terms of, like, they're going to be the representatives of the companies if something happens.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, that when you look at, like, the specifics of drone shows versus the drone industry as a whole, there's, like, much different risks associated with it. So, you have, like, home builders associations. You've got, you know, all these groups, the Rifle Association, right? And what do those groups do? They kind of help ensure safe and responsible, you know, industry development. Because what's good for, what do they say, the goose is good for the gander. And what's bad for the goose is bad for the gander.
Yeah.
Can't believe I said that not once. I just said it twice.
One for all for one.
And exactly. So when this one thing happens, or these two things happen, it makes people question. They don't understand just this company, especially as drone light shows have just really been able to, like, have an impact, and it just goes back to money. Get a market share, you know. This happens, and you can imagine that there's probably, like, fireworks companies that have made millions, if not billions, of dollars over the years that are maybe on the other side, like, actually spending money to make it harder for drone light shows because they don't benefit from it. So I think collectively working together, folks can establish standards. I don't know. I hate things that cost something. So I imagine joining this association is going to cost these companies something. Hopefully the benefit, you know, outweighs that cost, because, you know, maybe if you're trying to hire a company to do a drone show, you might say, well, they're part of the association, so they're recognized as meeting a certain standard. So this could help, you know, the good reputable companies have a way to show to potential clients that they're in this and they're meeting that safety standard. So
yeah,
it's pretty interesting.
Like a badge they wear to show people that, you know, you can look into this. We're the best, you know. I'm a part of the group, the Cool Kids Club.
€100.
Oh, that's nothing.
€100 paid annually. Yeah, what I don't see is what you would call it on here. So
maybe they're starting their own. I'm sure there's going to be one or two.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, is this a European based one? Is this, but the it's an international. And so someone saw this and of course they're like, oh, hey, here's an opportunity to create something. But nevertheless,
I mean, it's a good step forward. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet or before, you know. No, it's still fairly new, but Well, there was never, you doing it.
It's like there wasn't a need for it, right? Up until this point, it was just kind of like you, the organization, make direct contact, but now people start to question it. And just like building houses, I think probably years and years ago, you just, you know, building houses, no building codes, no standards. Now, you know, you got to have tons of money in the bank in order to become a general contractor and build. And there's all kinds of stuff. And it's, at the end of the day, it's to protect the consumer from getting screwed by someone who's just going to build them a house that falls apart. Anywho, and wrapping things up, because we've gone over like usual, the last thing, I thought this was really, really interesting, is to ensure compliance of trash laws, New York City considers deploying drones. And this came out in the Gothamist. So if people didn't know, there was a actual thing called the Gothamist, and it's dedicated to New York City information. So sanitation department is considering enlistment of drones to combat the war on trash. What do you think about this, Terry?
I mean, it's so funny that New York has such an unstable relationship with trash. I've heard so many things about trash in New York. But this is, I mean, I don't know. Just flying a drone to see if there's trash, people putting their trash out early. I don't know how big of a problem it is. I guess it is a big problem because you get trash outside, you get rats. And then rats are disgusting. New York's known for rats. It's a good step. I like this.
Yeah, something about ghost cars. I mean, I just became familiarized with ghost guns, and now I guess there's ghost cars. So people are just dumping trash, leaving ghost cars. The city's used the drones to actually apprehend subway surfers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that. Pretty stupid. Interesting. But these stupid ghost cars, this is crazy. I mean, this is just like a unregistered, unmarked, bogus. And somebody has just literally left it on the side of the road with what looks like probably just a bunch of trash up here.
Honey, go take out the trash. You got to go steal a car and put it outside.
Take out the trash. Illegal plates ahead of congestion. This is crazy. Thousands of cars just abandoned.
Right. Can here. I have them? Can I have the working ones?
I'm not sure there's any working ones. But yeah, to deploy these drones, I wonder if it would be, that's just weird, because you think with all the, like, they don't have any cameras in like already that are like in place that are able to monitor this. And then the people that are, oh, this is crazy. The people that are ditching and leaving it anyway, can they even afford to pay the fine that you're going to try to?
No, definitely not.
Put on that.
They're putting their trash out early, man. Whoa, 15 minutes early. Find me. You know, I think the real thing here is just maybe don't live in New York City, at least. New York's maybe, fine. New York City's.
Yeah. I'm not a big New York City person, but I do understand why people would live there and could live there. And maybe you just have to put up with the ghost, the occasional, you know, ghost car and trash pile. We don't get many ghost cars out here.
Yeah. No, I mean, you do.
And then
it's just theft of a car.
Well, just these, like, I'm saying, like, if I went outside, this doesn't happen in, you know, North Carolina, the area that I'm in. But it's interesting how would the drone be used to kind of catch these people? You know what I mean? Like, that's where you're going to just be flying up and down the streets. And again, just use the pole cameras, like flock safety. Someone has to already have something that's like monitoring these streets and roads. And if they don't, that's kind of creepy. We appreciate everybody tuning in. We ran over time per normal operating procedures. We've talked about a whole range of things. DJI's GeoZone unlock. It's going to be crazy for folks that are you know, not totally paying attention. DJI drones are almost like impossible to get at this point in the United States. And there's a lot of American, you know, companies and businesses that stand to benefit from DJI drones not being here in the U.S., but it's creating a very interesting time for businesses and consumers. Kind of talked about how and what it's going to take, right? If we're going to get rid of these Chinese drones and the Chinese supply chain, we're going to need motor manufacturers, battery manufacturers, companies like Ascent Aero Systems. You know, they're going to need access to materials, supplies, in order to continue to produce what they're making. And and hopefully this idea, you know, drives the cost down, because the problem is everybody's throwing money into production of motors and production of this. And it's like, all right, well, how much are those things going to cost? You can make them, but how much is it going to cost you to make them? And that's what we're going to have to find out. And when you're hiring executives from Tesla and, as Terry says, high quality keyboard companies, that can't be cheap. So trail cam drones, pretty cool stuff, and potential counter UAS on the motorcade. I'm sure that's something that we'll be seeing a lot of in the coming years, and people will start to point at. And I think eventually, right now, a lot of it's quiet, but once folks know that these systems are effective, they're going to want people to know that they're in place, because the whole purpose is to, you know, deter people. And, you know, the more you can kind of put out there that we have the capability without telling people how it works, you're going to deter people from trying to do dumb stuff. And then Redmond PD, Hempstead PD, really advancing things with their DFR programs. Hopefully a DFR program is coming to a township or a village near you, because a DFR program is just going to make a department more effective and ideally make a community safer to live, reside in, operate a business, and raise a family. So good job to those departments. And then we'll see what happens here with drone light shows. I'm sure all these companies have taken a hit across the board with the information coming out about, you know, these very bad incidents that happen. But just go back, look at aviation. That's what these drones are. They're aircraft. We have to treat them like that. We have to operate in ways that mitigate risk at all times. And when things happen, you got to ground aircraft and you got to assess and find ways to make things better, and make things better, not just for one, but for everybody. Terry, you got any final words?
Just realized I haven't heard very much about the New Jersey drones. So that's kind of weird. That's it for me, guys. Hope you guys have a wonderful day.
Yeah. And so what we did here, I think it was yesterday during, or the day before, the day of the inauguration, they did ask Trump about the drones in Jersey, and he did make a statement that they were going to be getting to the bottom of it ASAP and getting a report out. So I'm sure that it's, like I've said in the past on the podcast, I think it's hysteria. I don't think the report's gonna you know, have any information about an Iranian warship off the coast or, you know, some sort of, you know, enemy foreign country.
Looking for nukes, clearly.
Yeah, searching for chemical nuclear waste. But hey, thank you as always, Terry, for co-hosting Weekly Wings with us. We appreciate everybody's time and attention. As always, you know, jump over to dronelife.com, subscribe to the daily newsletter in order to stay informed and educated on the drone industry and all things related to it. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy your morning, afternoon, evening. Enjoy the rest of your work. Enjoy whatever it is that you are going to do after this podcast ends. Thank you very much, and fly safe.